All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 15 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. This is our last lecture of new material before test one. So let me tell you a little bit about the test that we are going to be doing. Over the course of any particular year of History at Our House, we typically have six tests. So this is one of six coming up at the end of this week here. And test weeks are unique in a number of regards. So I definitely, for one thing, I just want to note that I think that tests are an important part of education. And like memorization, like a lot of things that grown-ups that you know and that I am and know, we have a certain feeling concerning the way that tests were done when we were kids, and it's has a lot to do with how we feel about memorization, for instance, and we don't remember those kinds of things fondly. However, as a historian and a teacher who takes history very seriously and who is trying to do the right thing by you in this difficult subject, I must say that I believe very strongly in tests. And I hope that in your homeschool, you will try in whatever way that you can to push yourself to do the tests in one way or another. And it is an important challenge activity in tests. Life is, to put the matter simply, if I had to explain why I think everybody here should do tests, I would put it like this. Life is full of tests. And so we need to learn how to deal with when our abilities, when our knowledge, when our strengths and weaknesses and so on are tested. And taking tests in school is a great way to do that. And so that is at root why I believe in testing. And I also believe in it for a number of other reasons. But basically, tests provide us with an opportunity when it comes to history. Tests provide us with an opportunity to stop and intensively focus on that which we might have just let kind of coast. We let ourselves coast along. We let ourselves kind of drift and not always pay very close attention to the things that we're learning. And mostly Mr. Powell's talking, and who knows, maybe there's a distraction and you didn't catch a particular thing and so on, right? Life is like that too, where we kind of typically drift along and don't have, to really put out our total best effort all the time, right? But then we do have to put it out sometimes. And this is just a really important part of how we conduct ourselves. Excuse the interruption here. We're going to deal with an interruption on our end. We don't usually have that problem. Okay, sorry. What else did I want to say? And in particular, with regard to this history material, what we do in the tests is we collect, well, what amounts to about 6 weeks worth of work, and we concentrate it into a few days of effort. See how that works? See how we take this massive quantity, a large quantity, 6 weeks of effort, and then we focus on it in a concentrated way over a period of a few days. And assuming we've done that work ahead of time, then the second phase, the concentrated phase, now gives us an opportunity to really learn it with a new level of understanding and walk away from that part of the course, this first 6 weeks of the course, with something that really is a base for continuing on. Rather than, as when I was a kid, we learned a bunch of junk, then we had a test, and then we memorized it. We worked really hard to memorize it, and then we forgot it immediately, promptly. Just as soon as we walked out of that room and we took the test, we forgot it. And we went on to the next stuff. And so there was obviously something deeply wrong with that. And like me, your parents, and so on, our generations of prior students probably walked away with a really bad taste in our mouth when it comes to tests. But we have to get over that, because those were the wrong kind of tests, what the wrong kind of history. So we are doing the right kind of history here, and we need to do tests as well about that. All right, so how do we do it then? Well, I want to provide you with all the help that I can on my end, and hopefully that is being boosted by the help that your parents are giving you also at home on their end over the next 3 days. And so here's what we're going to do. Share my screen with you here for a second. Okay. So what we are going to do today is we are going to cover the last of the new material. This is your class webpage. And it indicates that today we're going to talk about Mennes and Armour one more time here. And then what you will do after this class is what I want every family to make sure they try to do here after this class is go and print off week 5 and 6 class notes. They are available on the upper elementary and lower elementary web pages. And of course, if you don't have them all printed out, then you should go back. You got 5 and 6. You scroll back through the class webpage. Oh, and back here you will find, well, there's week 3. I must have skipped week 4. Where is it? Here's week 4, right? And as you go back, each week you'll find another one, week 3, and so on, if you don't have them printed off yet. And you go ahead and you print those all off. Okay, and they look like this, right? And your first task in making test preparations is to read through these as a family and make sure you understand them. If you're an upper elementary student, maybe you're reading them on your own. But if you're a lower elementary student, you are almost certainly reading them with mom or dad, right? And then you are checking yourself to find out if you understand the words. And if you don't understand, or the words and the meaning of the sentences, of course, you have to talk about it. And if mom or dad can't help you to understand, or they're not sure exactly what Mr. Powell means, then it's really simple. You put a little star here next to it. Okay, so I'll give you an example. You go and you print out the class notes, and then you have a problem with part of them. So you come over here and you say, okay, Mr. Powell, let's see. Oh yeah, here's a good example of one. Give me a sec while I scroll to it, because this is a good one around here. Okay, here. So then you're reading through the class notes and you come up against something that's a little bit curious to you. You come up here and you say, Mr. Powell, there's a word right here that I don't get. It's the word decipher. That might be in your class notes or it might not be, right? Who can say what it means to decipher somebody, to decipher something? Yeah, maybe some people know it, some people don't. Opal, what does it mean?
It means like to figure it out, to look at the, figure out what it is.
Okay, yeah, to figure it out. In this case, with regard to languages, it, you can say kind of a synonym would be to translate, to understand what it means. Yeah, to decipher something is to understand the meaning of it. Good. Okay, so if you didn't know that, well, you might have to look it up, right? Or you might have to ask Mr. Powell or things like that. Okay, good. So you're going to read through these notes. And then tomorrow, we are going to... let me see. How is this going to work here? I don't know. Why did I get all of a sudden get a little bit confused? Yeah, tomorrow we're going to do a review. In class. So if you, sorry, funny how I got frozen there, but tomorrow we're going to do a review in class. And I'm going to bring these class notes with me, and I'm going to put them on the screen all of the weeks. And if you don't ask me questions, I'm going to ask you questions. So this is part of how Mr. Powell helps. So Mr. Powell is going to say, well, okay, you must have read part E here, our connection to archaic Egypt, and anybody have any questions? Nobody puts their hand up, so Mr. Powell is going to say, okay, well, what does point 4 mean? Right? And who's this most important character who brought all these scientists to Egypt? And if you don't know or you don't understand my question, well, then that will help you in your test preparation. Okay, the test preparation exercises are all about finding out what you know already, thanks to the work that we've done so far, and what you don't know, or what you've forgotten or haven't realized was important and you didn't pay close enough attention or what have you. There's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't necessarily know it or feel comfortable with it just yet. Okay, and then, because this is the test week, you're going to spend extra effort. You're going to concentrate your effort. You're going to spend more time working harder than usual to make sure that you get it. So not every week is a test week. Not every day in life is a big test, right? So we only do that every once in a while. But it's a very important exercise to help us learn what it's like to, in those times when we need it in life, and I guarantee you, it does come around quite a bit, where you have to rally and you have to do extra stuff. Okay, so let's go. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at mayonnaise number one last time, and then you will print off after today's class. You will print off and read your class notes and have them ready for tomorrow. And then after that, tomorrow I'm going to explain more. All right, I'm not going to explain the whole procedure just yet. Okay, there's one last thing that I need to say before we go, because if I don't say it now, I might forget it at the end of class. Tomorrow, we are going to do our first facts practice in class, at the beginning of class, as part of our test preparation. So if you have not yet printed this off, well, you also need to get to that. Okay? You need to have a copy of this, more than one copy of this, printed off, preferably in color because it's very pretty, and fill it out and see how long it takes you, because you're going to have about 3 minutes to do it in class tomorrow. And I want everybody who's in class doing it. Okay, so there's also that. So facts practice plus class notes need to be ready for tomorrow. Okay, so the whole homeschool team has to be ready to do this here. Working together in a concentrated effort to get ready for tomorrow. Anybody have questions about that? All right, we'll see how it goes. Let us now turn back to this important... wait a minute. I think somebody's hand did go up. Wyatt, Henry, what's up, guys?
This is Wyatt. I thought you were going to do it today.
I kind of didn't organize it well enough to get it done today. So I decided to give you guys another day. Okay. I wanted to give you guys another day because I thought some people wouldn't be ready because I wasn't necessarily clear enough. Okay. So I rather have it assigned overnight and then you're ready to do it the next day. Okay. Thank you. All right, so let's now turn to back to the Narmer palette. And let's see what it tells us. We have the man in the bowling pin hat on the left-hand side. And he is carrying a mace or a club, right? And he has a man kneeling before him. And we can imagine that this represents his power over him, that he is going to strike him and probably kill him. And this is definitely a violent palette. So I apologize in advance for the violence, but that is the way that it goes. No country in history has been unified by people being nice. We got to get used to that, and we got to figure out what is so interesting about that. Why is that, that human life is like that, and what can we learn about it, and so on. So Mayonnaise Narmer, this character, I'm going to explain his name again today, is conducting this act of violence here. He's driving others before him. He has another person that he is defeating right now, and he has his servant here carrying some refreshing water and some sandals for him behind him. Last time, I challenged you to look at this part of the palette before we would leap over to the other side. And I'm going to go ahead and zoom in on that right now and show you what's on that part of the palette in case you didn't have a chance to do that. So, what is it? What is this curious collection of things? First of all, let me ask you a simple question. Is it real? Is it something that you would ever see in reality? That's going to help us. Sigourney?
No, it wouldn't be something real.
Okay, so it's not something real. It's not something you would ever find in reality. So then, what is it? What do we call this type of kind of collection of objects that doesn't represent anything real? Perhaps a bird we would expect to see in reality, but not a bird with a fist that can grasp an object like this. So even that is just not real. So what do we call this type of object that's not itself a real object? It's an object that does something else. Rosetta?
A symbol.
It's a symbol. It's a set of objects that stands for something else. So, what could it possibly stand for? Let's look at this very curious thing. We have a long, narrow something, and it has a head, like a person. And it seems to have a straw or a snorkel. Like you would use underwater. And that snorkel is being held in a fist by a bird. And then coming out of its long body, almost like a caterpillar type of a body or something, but it doesn't have any legs, is a set of what? What do these look like? Rosanna, what do you think?
Well, I think it might be a symbol of the gods.
Okay, of something supernatural. That certainly is a good guess for those of us who are familiar and who remember seeing before kind of a falcon in one of the images that I showed you, and who might, you know, if you've read any library books on ancient Egyptian religion, then yeah, you might be thinking, oh yeah, this is one of those gods. This is a falcon would be the god Horus or Ra. It had different names over time. So that certainly is something you might be able to learn. Okay, but why is this falcon standing on top of this thing, holding the snorkel in its fist and stuff like that? What's going on? What could it possibly be? What could this be? Is a very, you know, it's very certainly not easy for us to know. Opal?
It looks kind of like a bunch of the other spoon things that he's using to hit people.
Oh, it looks like almost like a bunch of maces, if they were kind of solid objects or like shovels almost right. Except that they're coming up out of the body and they're all joining the body. So a little bit different arrangement, right? Nobody's holding them. And you can see this kind of pattern here where there's, it looks a little bit different than that. You're right that it's similar, right? So, I'll tell you what historians have decided that this stands for. It is definitely a symbol. So that means that it's not literal, right? It's not something that you look at it and it looks exactly what it means. Okay? It's a symbol, so we have to kind of try to put ourselves in the mind of the Egyptians and how they think. And what would this god perhaps be drinking from in a place like Egypt? Or this man, or this entity drinking and so on. What could it be, this long thing? And perhaps if we imagine this to be plants instead, such as flowers, what could it be? What would flowers be coming up out of that would be long and narrow? Julia?
Maybe it's like the god of the Nile River.
That's a nice guess. That's a really nice guess. And that's what historians have suggested. And perhaps that's why we have this kind of idea of drinking from something, right? The water that provides the life for the plants in Egypt. This looks like papyrus flowers. We'll talk more about papyrus, because it's very important to Egyptian writing. Egyptologists, in other words, the historians of Egypt, have guessed that that is what this symbol is. That it's the Nile River, and it's the source of the papyrus plant, and a kind of life in Egypt. It's a very important symbol. And if we go back to our geography map, right, remember that all life in Egypt was really revolved around the river. And we'll talk more about that next time. So this is kind of a symbol of Egypt, a symbol of life in Egypt. And we have the crown as a symbol of him being the ruler of one part of Egypt. And now we're going to go to the other side of the tablet and take a look what we see over there and see how historians have understood this tablet to have a peculiar meaning. So, on this side of the tablet, what is the main character or main, sometimes, right, not a character, it's an object or a thing. On this side of the tablet, what's the most important thing? You might not be able to recognize it because it's pretty wild stuff. Opal?
The snakes coming out of the lions.
Yeah, okay, that's about as good as we could possibly describe it, right? I mean, what do we know of an entity that looks like this? We have never... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to zoom in here. I'm not doing a good job. Right, look at these creatures. As Opal says, snakes coming out of lions. Yeah, pretty close, right? I mean, what else could you possibly say? Historians have called these serpopards, which sounds like two different things combined, right? Serpopards is a combination of what two words, Patrick?
Snake.
Serpent. Serpa. And?
Leopard.
Leopard. Okay. Yeah. Serpent and leopard. Serpopard. Yeah, right. And so that's the idea here is we have these leopards with serpent necks. Serpopards. And they are being controlled by these people, evidently, that have them on a leash. Right? But notice how they are shown. What's so interesting about the way that the serpopods are shown? They each of them have these really long necks that curve back around like this and then come back to face each other. And both of their necks form this circle here in the very middle of the tablet. So they're coming together. They are intertwining. So we have to wonder, okay, what does that mean? Why would the ancient Egyptian artists show us two animals getting tangled together like this, coming together in some way? Wyatt, Henry?
One of the serpopods represents East Egypt and the other West Egypt.
Okay. East. Why do you guess East and West? Because they are on either side?
Yes, is when, I think it was Menes Narmer, when Menes Narmer conquered one of them, I think he was either the west or the east.
Okay,
east,
yeah. Yeah, you're just misremembering, so that's okay. I might have mentioned it only once. The terms are, which we're going to get to here, Upper Egypt and Lower Egypt. But you're right, two parts, basically, of Egypt. So that part you got right for sure. So yeah, we got the idea of them coming together over here. Okay, are they coming together in a nice sort of way? Well, let's look, we should look over here. We should look in the top panel over here and, well... It's not all very pleasant, so I'll understand if you don't like it, but tell me what you see. See if you can figure it out. First of all, on this part of the tablet, there's one person that's larger than everybody else all over again, right? We have this giant over here. And then we got these little people. Right? Julia, what do you make out?
Slaves.
Okay, probably slaves, right? Look at this guy again with the sandals and the container. So he's back. The little guy, the servant, is again with the giant. On this side. So that helps to remind us that, or give us the idea that perhaps this is the same character. Oh, and look, he's holding the club again. He's holding the mace in his hand. Aha. But he's not wearing the same hat. He's wearing a different hand. And experts in Egyptian history have pieced this together, and they have realized that, well, this hat represents one part of Egypt, and this hat represents the other part. And we will see, and I'll give you a reminder that in the painting, we will notice the combination of the hats when we go back to history through art. Kind of giving it away there, but you should probably, I'll give you a reminder, but I won't remind you again until Wednesday when you actually look at the painting, that the leader in the painting is wearing both hats at the same time. Here, he's wearing the hat of Lower Egypt, the crown of Lower Egypt. On the other side, he's wearing the crown of Upper Egypt. So here he is now as the ruler of Lower Egypt. His servant is holding his things again. And before him are standing these people that are carrying these flags. It's, what kind of procession is this? When would you see kind of like a march of people like this, and all of these guys are carrying these various flags and symbols and so on? What kind of event would that be? Opal?
Probably a parade.
A parade, like a victory parade. Okay? And how do we know that it's a victory parade? Well, this is the part that's kind of gross. What do we see on the right-hand side? Can you make it out? Wyatt, what do you see, Henry?
This is Wyatt. People with now laying down with their head between their feet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, their heads are no longer attached to their bodies. Their heads are here between their feet, which is pretty gross, of course. So luckily, it's not very exact, right? So these are all the dead soldiers of the conquered army, right? So they are having the victory parade. He has defeated them, and now he is wearing the crown of Lower Egypt. He is the winner. And we have another symbol of the victory of this conqueror down here. Again, we have a character who's kind of sprawling at the base of the tablet. And what's happening to him? Opal?
He's getting smushed by this thing. And also, those can't be served. Those can't be part leopard because leopards have spots.
Well,
it doesn't make any sense. Why did they name it that?
Well, okay, maybe that's interesting, and I don't know if they always have to. So you'll have to take that up with the Egyptology Council. Okay, so this is a bull, and he is trampling this character over here, right? So and what else is he doing? His head is down. Can anybody make out, if you need it, I can go in maybe a little bit further. What else is the bull doing with his horns? Can anybody figure out what that symbol is? Rosetta?
Stabbing the person?
Did you say stabbing?
Yes.
Oh, okay. This is his paw here, hoof, right? And he's stepping on him. And over here, the person's only down here. We have another object here. Different type of object, which is symbolized there. Does anybody recognize it? It would be a building with a wall around it. And what is this huge bull doing? We see all these pieces broken here. What is the symbol? Rosetta?
Destroying it.
Yeah, destroying it, right? So this is, again, like a god or a great symbolic beast that's very powerful, and he has destroyed the fortified walls of the city and trampled on its king, trampled on its leader. So again, we have a symbol of conquest. So when we pull back to the entire tablet here, we can see that this tablet really does tell us a story, much like a more sophisticated work of modern art. It has a main character that is a conqueror. He is driving his enemies before him. He is defeating this other character. And it's something that's happening in Egypt, which is symbolized by the Nile River. And then on the other side, the two different halves of Egypt are being shown, being brought together. And the same man, with the servant behind him, is now wearing the crown of the other part of Egypt, marching in a victory parade, and his enemies are slain and lying in great numbers before him. The city of the ruler of Lower Egypt has been smashed by the bull, and he has been trampled. So perhaps he's saying that the gods are on my side, or I am a god. As we'll see, the rulers of Egypt kind of liked to parade around in this way and be treated in this way. So we have here a story of a great war, but it's a war of unification. It's a war of the two halves of Egypt coming together. And every once in a while, inside of different parts of this tablet, we see different symbols in hieroglyphs. They're not always very clear, but they're in different parts of the tablet. Some there, perhaps some up here, and some down here. Here's another very important one. And because of Champollion and the Egyptologists who learned how to read hieroglyphics, these symbols could be deciphered, the story could be understood, and they realized that this was a depiction of the beginning of Egyptian history. This is as far back as we can see. It is the story of Egypt coming together. There's going to now be, because of this character, who on the tablet, on an Egyptian documents, is called Narmer. Because of Narmer, Egypt is coming together. You'll read in your notes why Mr. Powell likes to call him Menes Narmer. Why not just Narmer? But I'll leave you to read in the notes to find out why that is. But basically what we are looking at here is what one historian called the first document in history. This is the beginning of what we know about history. Of course, we know that many things happened much earlier than this, but this is as far back as we can see clearly. This is as far back as we can see events and say that we know who this is, we know when this is, we know what he's doing, and so on. Right? We can answer all those questions that we need answered in order for it to be history. All right, so that's it. We're at the very beginning now. We have done this very important task, which is necessary for ancient history, which is we have navigated from where we are, the present, all the way back to the beginning. And now we're ready to study ancient history, which is basically going in the opposite direction. It's going from the beginning back to where we are, following the story and how it went. And learning the mysteries of these archaic and ancient cultures. So we're ready. Okay, folks, one last reminder before we part for today. In order to be ready for tomorrow's class, you need to do two things. You need to print out and read all the class notes. And you need to print out at least two copies of the facts practice. Do one as a practice and be ready to do the other one in class. Last questions or comments about that? All right, sounds like this team is ready to go. Okay, go to it. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.